Do you know what? I'm excited. It's a bit of an ambition of mine to preach in a church that's posh enough to have, like, water for the preacher. Thank you, brother. So I'm going to have some. Now I feel like a proper speaker. So yeah, great to be here. Thanks for the invite. I'm guessing I'm thanking Matt, because I guess most of you didn't invite me. He did. So you can blame him afterwards. But can I just have to get a bit of a feel to know you? So another ambition of mine actually is to be preaching in church on two levels like this. Do you know what I mean? And it's going to take me a while. If I neglect you up there, can you just shout every now and again? Just say, "Oi, what about us?" But so it's great. It's great to be with you. Can I just have a show of hands for those that have been a Christian for less than 10 years? Okay. What about less than 5 years? Great. Okay. Now, I do that everywhere I speak now, because it's good. It's good to get a bit of a feel, get a bit of an idea. I want to tell you that if I say who's been a Christian for less than a year, and let's say 25% of the room put their hands up, I want to tell you it will trash this church. Okay, it will change everything, and it will be not easy. There'll be some things that are exciting, and there'll be some things that are not easy. But it is an adventure. That's my encouragement to you. And it's, you know, God is on it. Okay, are we up for that? So I just want to. Can we turn to Matthew 9, 35, and this text has been one of probably my favourite texts, but it's also taunted me over the years, I'll be honest with you. It's sort of, I'll explain why in a minute. But Jesus has been very busy, and it starts like this. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field." And I've read that scripture lots of times, and I'm both inspired by it, and I'm sort of challenged by it all in one. And here's why I'm challenged. I read it, and I sometimes think, is it? Is the harvest plentiful? I've been a Christian for over 30 years now. I was two, right? My experience hasn't always been that. I've gone out on missions, and I've done different things over the years, various different types of missions, and I've come back, and my overwhelming sense hasn't been the harvest is plentiful. Being, man, this is hard work. And I read the scriptures, and I read about Jesus, and I think Jesus spent much of his energy and much of his time trying to get away from crowds. And then we spend a lot of our time trying to get crowds. I've done everything legal to try and gather a crowd for church. We've given out donuts. We've had celebrities speak. We've done everything. I'm sure you've done the same. It's what you're doing now. Yeah. Well, just set your sights a bit higher, I would. So I've done everything we can to try and get crowds to come into church. Jesus did everything he could to try and get away from crowds. It's a bit of a head scratcher, isn't it? What? How do we handle that? What's that all about? And there's some stuff for us to dig into, some stuff for us to learn. And really, that's what I want us to dig into. Would you like to spot the crowds? Would you like to see how Jesus saw? And it is my conviction that it is true, and it is true today, here in this city, in our time, that the fields are ready for harvest, and the workers are few. Okay, and the truth is there are workers, but we've got to figure out how to do it. We've got to figure out how to build church. We've got to figure out how to welcome people. We've got to figure out how to get ourselves in front of the people that are harassed and helpless and like sheep without a shepherd. Because those people, I promise you, are hungry. They have all sorts of worldviews, all sorts of things, frameworks of thinkings that affects them finding Jesus. Do you know what I mean? They will have an opinion about church. They'll have an opinion about Christianity. That is our job to reinforce what their opinion when it's right, but also to demolish where their opinion about Christianity and Jesus is just wrong. Do you know what I mean? And it's an adventure. And it's a challenge. And for a community, it's not easy. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if you know how hard it is. If you don't know what to do to come into church. I remember a church leader once spoke to us and said, this was a, you know, I may not get an invite back after this, but you know, he said, it was a group of church leaders, and he said, what I want you all to do on your way home today is I want you to go into a bookies and I want you to place a bet. Anyone, well, I won't ask. Some of you perhaps, you know your way around a bookies. I did not know my way around a bookies. Do you know what I mean? And so you walk into the bookies and you think, everyone seems to know what they're doing, and I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? Do I speak to the guy at the behind the thing? You know, there's people sat there and they all watching races and different things, and they all seem to know what they're doing, and they cheer and they can clap and applause at the right times. And do you know what I mean? All of that. And honestly, that is what it's like for an unbeliever to come into our church. I mean, we've been, you know, as a family, we've been going to church for. You know, years and years and years, and we know our way around church. 30 years I've been a Christian. I've been to probably hundreds of churches in that time, but still today, when it came to communion, it's like we thought, take the cup and keep it. Do you know what I mean? And then we're thinking everyone's taking the cup, drinking it, and putting it back in the thing. Now we didn't put our cups back in the thing. I'm now thinking everybody's looking at us, thinking they're trying to steal the cups. Do you know what I mean? And we've been a Christian. We've been going to church for a long time. Do you know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, without you realizing it, there are cultural things that we do in church that the people that we're trying to reach haven't got a clue about, and we need to help them. Do you know what I mean? We really need to help them. Anyway, what I want to do is give you a bit of background of the journey that God's been taking me on over the years on this journey of spotting the mission field and seeing how we can reach the mission field. Because it is my conviction and it is my conclusion. It will be at the end of the talk. My conclusion is the fields are ready for harvest and the workers are few. And so my plan, just so you know, is to thrust you out into the mission field. That's the plan. Okay? Right. Okay. So just to get a bit of the background of it, so Jesus saw the crowd, had compassion on them, and saw them harassed, saw them helpless. The background of that, he'd been busy. Jesus had been busy. In the chapters before this, Jesus had healed a man with leprosy. He'd had an exchange with a centurion about faith. There's another bit where it just says Jesus went somewhere and healed many. There's another time where a guy, came out of a gravestone, a tombstone that had broken the chains that were about binding him. A crazy guy came and then pleaded with Jesus not to hurt them. Jesus said, "Who are you?" And he said, "We're legion because we're many." Oh, and then, well, please don't hurt us. Help us, you know, send us to the pigs. So yeah, okay, to the pigs. Pigs run off a cliff. 2,000 pigs run down a cliff, down, fall off a cliff, and then the owner of the pigs comes and wants to have a chat with Jesus. So that happens. Then a paralyzed man was presented to Jesus on a mat. He healed that man. Then there's somebody there's a dead girl, or she was ill and she was dying, and they called Jesus to come and pray for her. Jesus said, "I'll go." Sort of got a little bit distracted on the way by a lady that had an issue with blood. She touched Jesus. "Who touched me?" Jesus, the disciple said, "Well, loads of people touched you, Jesus." And no, but somebody touched me. And that lady, well, it was me. And of course, you know, an issue with blood. She wasn't allowed to be in the crowd, let alone touch the rabbi, and she was healed, and Jesus talked about faith and so on and so forth. And then they got to the girl's house. The girl had died because Jesus got distracted by the lady with blood, and Jesus said, no, she's not dead, she's asleep. I mean, she was dead. Do you know what I mean? Just to be clear, she was dead. Jesus told her to wake up, and she did. And then there was a blind and mute man that Jesus healed. He did that, and then he saw the crowd, and he went flipping heck. I don't know if Jesus said flipping heck. I don't know. I've added that. That's not in the text. Pete will tell you later on that it's in the Greek. But he said flipping heck, and he looked at the crowds. And do you know what I mean? There's a sense, I believe, that Jesus in his humanity was tired. Do you know what I mean? Was tired, was worn out, and this is a lot of work in front of me. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, it talks about it being moved with compassion. I've just realised, hang on, that bit's fallen off. And it was, I thought I've got a lump on my stomach. So can I just, I'll put that there. Anyway, carry on. What was I saying? So he's moved with compassion here somewhere. I was feeling it here. He's moved with compassion, and he sees the crowds, and he thinks, do you know what? One person isn't enough for this job. This is too much for one person. And he shares that with his friends, his closer friends, and he shares it with them that sees the crowds and think, this is so overwhelming. This is so overwhelming to me. The need. There are people. I could, you know, you may see a crowd, but what I see is a whole group of people that are just lost, helpless, don't know what to do, don't know where to go, nobody to lead them, and they need some help. And I can't be everywhere at once. And that's why Jesus said it was better for you that I go, wasn't it? So that it doesn't have to be everywhere. We can be everywhere. Through the Holy Spirit, and he prayed. I'll ask them to pray that the Lord of the harvest would send out workers. And I think it's really important that we feel that. Do you know what I mean? That we live in a world that is broken. We live in a world that is damaged. And I think it's important to acknowledge Jesus' leaning was towards those that are harassed. Though you know, Jesus was criticized for hanging out with dodgy people. Do you know what I mean? And it's because he's leaning. You know, it's the same today. God's heart leans in towards those who are broken. And he always will. You know, in the early church, there was a discussion about, you know, do they get circumcised? Don't they get circumcised? All of those things. I'm happy to tell you, they said it's that you don't have to. So if you're visiting this morning, it's okay. Relax. But they said, well, what should we do? What's the priority? What's the new? What is it to be, you know, a priority in the New Testament? It's just to remember the poor was the priority. That was the apostolic mandate. That was, of all the things that they could say were important, I don't know if we would say, right, okay, Jim spoke, right, and now we're going to change everything in Lifehouse. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what things we'd hold on to say, no, this is a priority. Well, we'll hang on to this. We won't let go of this. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's the songs, whether it's... Do you know what I mean? Well, I don't know what, you know. But for them, it was remember the poor. That was the priority. Anyway, so how have I... What's my journey in all of this? Matt asked me to tell some stories, so that's what I'll do. Some years ago, I don't know how many, because I'm just rubbish at knowing how many years ago, sometime in the past... I had a bit of an epiphany. I had a bit of a moment. I'd been working for the church for a little while, and I was doing what all church leaders do, and you know, moaning about how busy I am, and all of that sort of stuff. That's what church leaders do. And I was quite busy, and I just had this moment of like awakening, and I felt like, do you know what? Something like 70% of what I do isn't what I was called to do. And it's just one of those moments I thought, I just need to change. I need to stop this. Do you know what I mean? So if you send me emails, I might not answer. That's the bottom line. I do tend to answer, but I do it twice a week. And I leave them be the rest of the week. And I knew that God wanted me in front of people. Do you know what I mean? I needed to be in front of people, and mostly people that aren't yet saved. And so I had a coffee lined up with a friend of mine, a guy called Paul. He won't mind me telling the story. He came to Christ from a crack cocaine addiction and alcoholism, and he'd come to Christ, and he'd been a Christian for a little while, but he wanted to meet with me for a coffee. We had a coffee, and he said, "Jim, would you disciple me?" It's one of those moments then, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So it's great, isn't it? Someone says, "Would you disciple me?" Yes, because I'm the man. Anyway, and I thought, do you know what? I just knew in my heart, this guy is called to be an evangelist. So how am I going to disciple him? I could get some books out and we could go through some books, and those things are good and right and important. But actually what he needed to be, I need to show him how to reach the lost. So I said, I'll tell you what we'll do. Every week we'll hit the streets. So it was good for me and it was good for him. So we hit the streets and we would arrange. I could never do longer than about an hour or two at a time. Did about 2 hours at a time and then I was done. Okay, that just shows you my capacity. So we hit the streets and we had 2 or 3 years of every week hitting the streets, and we just, it opened my eyes to how people think and what's going on in people's lives, you know, in the city. And, you know, we had some brilliant times. You know, some of my favourite stories, they're old stories now because I'm not doing this anymore, because I'll tell you what I'm doing now, which is different. But you know, so there was one time when I saw two people, they were arguing really quite aggressively, and I felt God say to me, "Blessed are the peacemakers." And, oh, flipping heck. Jesus, you want me to do something, don't you? So I'm going to do something. And I felt like I should go over and talk to these two that were in the middle of this argument. And frankly, I just bottled it. Didn't do it. And I walked away and I was feeling a bit ashamed of myself that I hadn't done it. And then I saw one of the guys afterwards. And the guy that I saw afterwards was the one that I had compassion on, really, because he was the one being shouted at more than the other way around. And I said, "Oh," and I sort of stopped him. I said, "You know," I said, "Hi, I'm Jim. I couldn't help but notice earlier on you were having a bit of an argument. Are you okay?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm okay." And we had a conversation. And then you've got to think of how do you then sort of turn the conversation towards Jesus? Do you know what I mean? That's, you know, so I'm really clever. And like, you know, I've such a really clever plan. So I said, "So what do you think about Jesus?" Because, you know, smart and subtle me. And this guy beamed at me and he said, "It's me." I said, "What do you mean? It's you." And then he reaches into his pocket, gets he had some sort of, he was foreign, so he had some sort of card. His name was Miracle Jesus, Miracle Yesu. So he was called Jesus. So we met up a few times, we had coffee a few times, and I led Jesus to the Lord. So I don't know who else can say they led Jesus to the Lord, but I'm just saying that I did. And he came to Hope Church. So Hope Church, you know, had Jesus going to it. He's now moved. He's moved away now, just so you know. So we don't have Jesus in our church anymore. That sounded wrong. So just stuff, things like that. There's another conversation I had with a lady who was bent over double like this, and it was obvious. You know, again, me being sharp and, you know, clever. I said, "You look like you're in a bit of discomfort. Would you like me to pray for you?" "No, I would not," she said to me. "Oh, all right." And she said, "I'm an atheist and I'm not interested." I said, "Oh, tell me about it." You know, in other words, "I'm going to let you preach to me about atheism." She did, and she is pretty, you know, atheist. You know, she wasn't just atheist, like an easy thing to say that I'm not a Christian. She genuinely was an atheist. And I said, "Well, you know, I fully respect your atheism. I'm not, so I do have faith. I have seen some people healed. Do you mind if I pray anyway?" "Go on then," she said, because we'd built a bit of a rapport by that time. So I prayed, and I said, "Why don't you have a go at straightening your back for me?" And she said, "Well, it won't." And so I said, "Well, have a go." And she looked at me eyeball to eyeball, straightened her back, and said, "Maybe I need to reconsider my atheism." And she was healed. So we had a season of hitting the streets and being in front of people. I've got to tell you, not many people, apart from Jesus, got saved and started coming to church. So I was disappointed by that. So I'm just going to be honest about that. A lot of people didn't speak to us. Our sort of strategy was to not try and just speak to everybody, to really listen to the Spirit and go where he led us. There was one time it was pouring with rain, and I was looking at Paul. Paul's looking at me and thinking, do we need to call it a day? And we decided we're going to do this every week, rain or shine. So we were out in the snow, we were out in the rain, we were out in all elements. And this, it was tipping with rain, and I was like, oh, let's go to the shopping centre. And then I felt God, as we were moving from one place, I felt there was a guy on Broad Street sitting on a bench down Broad Street, and I felt God draw me to this guy, young guy, and I sat on the bench next to him, pouring with rain, and I said, I have these opening lines, but I said, if you could change one thing about your life, what would it be? And he looked at me and said, everything. I said, why don't you tell me about it? And there were meetings happening that week about whether he gets put into care. He was supposed to be at school. He was 14. He was smoking marijuana quite a bit, and his life was just doing that, really. And he clearly had some mental health problems, and I think he'd been beaten up by his dad a bit, so an abusive sort of home. And I said, we had a bit of a conversation, and I said, let me come clean and let me tell you why I'm sitting on a bench in the rain talking to you. I believe in Jesus. Don't talk to me about Jesus, is what he said to me. And I said, oh, why not? What's wrong with that? He said, I've prayed to Jesus every day for 3 months and he's done nothing. It's difficult to, when you go from there, do you know what I mean? And I said, Have you wondered what he might do? What would it look like if he did something? What would it be like? And he said, oh, I don't know. I said, well, how about if Jesus sent a funny looking bearded guy to sit on a bench next to you that's also experienced that kind of abuse, that's lived like that, that's had issues and come out the other side because of his love? How about Jesus sent you someone like that to show you another way? He might just do that. And we had this moment where we sat on the bench together. I held his hand. I'm not going to do it anymore. Hold people's hands with coronavirus. But I held his hands and I said, do you mind if we pray? And I just prayed the love of God into him. I've not seen him. His gran was a prayer, apparently. Not seen him since. I can't give you the ongoing story, but I do believe Jesus in that moment saw a guy, and he saw a guy and reached into a guy's heart. Not because I'm really not clever. Do you know what I mean? I'm not even brave, to be honest with you. But I was there. I was there. I was in it. I decided I had an epiphany. I decided to change my diary to make myself more available for people like him. Do you know what I mean? So I want to encourage us to do that. And as time's gone on, God started to speak to me and lead us in different ways, and we started different things, and some people got saved, and particularly amongst some of the broken, we started Good Soil Project, which I think people here would know about. Jerry's a fellow trustee at Good Soil, and things went on, and then God had really impressed on my heart. God spoke to me. They said, I've sent you to the poor. And I knew that he had. Do you know what I mean? That wasn't new to me. But it came with a new sense of urgency. And I started asking myself, who are the needy? Who are the broken? Who are the crowds in this city that are harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd? Who are they? Where are they? And how can I get in front of them? And I felt God lead me towards estates, estates where predominantly it's their social housing. And then shortly after, somebody rang me up saying, we've got a little group in Dines Green, we're moving on, would you consider taking it on as a congregation? So I didn't have to pray about it because God had sort of led me that way. So we took it on, and I heard a talk much like this groundbreaking talk that you're hearing. I'm just joking. Well, I heard a talk at a conference by a guy called Alan Scott, he talked about the sort of recent history of the church, and he talked about. There was a time when maybe sort of 50 years ago, 40, 50 years ago, and he's generalizing. So, but in general, much of the church were a little bit insular, and kind of, you know, having good times, but not a lot of interaction with the lost. And then suddenly they realized, oh, we need to reach the lost. And things like Alpha emerged on the back of that, and suddenly the church now, are aware of the lost in a way. I think not just Alpha, but particularly Alpha, I think there's been a move of God, and has got the church thinking about the lost in a way that perhaps we hadn't for a long time. And then he said, when we started reaching the lost, we realized that there is need in society. What are we going to do about need? And things like food banks emerged, and we started serving people and doing things for people and helping people and expressing the compassion of Christ in a practical way, and we did that. He said he felt the next transition for us, and an important transition for us as a church, was that we started serving with the community, and it just is one of those things. It's not very profound, but it pierced my heart, actually, when I heard it. I thought, that's right. Do you know what I mean? And we were just about to start Dines Green. I thought, that's how I'm going to do Dines Green. So the first thing I did when we started the Dines Green congregation is I met with the person that runs, the CEO of Worcester Community Trust, who they run about six or seven centres, community centres, in particularly the more deprived areas of the city. So I made contact. Could we have a coffee? I've started leading a little church in Dines Green. I'd like to get to know who you guys are, what your vision is. And basically, I sort of stood before them and said, well, this is my plan anyway. That we're here to serve. We want the community to be blessed by us being here. What do you want us to do? Do you know what I mean? No strings attached. What do you want us to do? And before I even got a chance to say that, she looked at me and said, we've talked about, she had a team of them there, so we've talked about this, and what we want you to do is, first thing we're going to do is we're going to halve your rent, so we want to make it easier for you, and would you consider starting a church in all of our centres? And it's one of those moments you think, I even tell this story, I think, am I exaggerating that? Surely there's a bit of preachiness in that. No, that's what happened. That's genuinely what happened. I was just overwhelmed, really, by an open door. And it was the first step into, we're just going to serve, but no strings attached. I graciously took the half a rent, and we're in the process at the moment of looking at another venue to do another one. But we'll see. There's a whole kind of the work as a few challenge with it. So we started that, and so we started this little church. It's a congregation. It's part of Hope Church, but it's a congregation. And we started it based on, what can we do now to serve people? So I'd sign up for litter picks, and we would do community events. We'd do the bouncy castle, face painting. None of us could do any of that stuff. I did face painting with some of the things. I can do a good Batman. That's about it. But we just rolled our sleeves up and we got involved with the community. As a result of that, some things started to happen. Do you know what I mean? Just serving. So here's the key. Right, the key is that we serve with no strings attached, but we were unashamedly the church. So everybody in Dines Green that knows me, and that's quite a few now, beard helps, the bearded church guy. Do you know what I mean? So I'm the bearded church guy. So when we do an event together, they know that I'm the church guy, so they know really that I want them all saved. Do you know what I mean? There's not a secret agenda. It's an out there agenda, but I'm not going to talk about that all of the time. I'm going to serve. Do you know what I mean? So we've served, and on the back of that serving, so one of the things that we've done is we get free food from Greg's, which is quite good. So when Greg's, you know, closing up and their cakes and stuff are out of date, which is why of this, when their cakes are out of date, you know, then we get the cakes and then we give the cakes to the community. So we have the young people, the youths, you know, put out their spliffs and come in and have a cake. We usually ask them to smoke their joints, not by the front door, because it smells in the building. So that's what we do. And they come in and they have some cake. You know, in the first probably year or two, they just caused us trouble. To be honest with you, they wanted to break in all the time. You'd have to check every time you left. You'd have to check the windows because they would always put the handles up so that they can then break in later on. All of that stuff they would do, but we kept giving them cake. We kept giving them cake. And then one day, the youth leader, that runs the secular youth work in the community centre, they spoke to the youth leader and said, could we do something for the church sometime? Because they're always doing stuff for us. I didn't know that. Do you know what I mean? I just thought they were a pain. We were giving them cake. So they'd just done a graffiti thing, and I had a graffiti artist in and teach them how to do graffiti and stuff. Could we do some artwork for the church? So then I get a phone call from the youth leader saying, Jim, could you come and tell the young people about Jesus to inspire some art that they want to do for you? So I, all right, doing my hair that day. No, so I went and just told them about Jesus, and particularly, you know, the young people. I told them about the woman caught in adultery. It's one of the stories. The two stories I told them about was the two trees in the Garden of Eden, and the woman caught in adultery, and the woman caught in adultery. The trees they sort of got, but the woman caught in adultery. The one without sin cast the first stone. They got it. Do you know what I mean? And do you know what? In our culture, when we want fair play, we want don't judge me, to hear Jesus speak to a woman that should have been judged and say, I don't judge you, you could have heard a pin drop in that moment when I explained that to them. I said, all right, Jesus is like that, is he? Yes, he's like that. Wonderful. So we continue. So we're building relationship. No one's really making their way to church at this point. Then we did an event. We did one of the fun days of the face painting and all of that sort of stuff. But I invited a friend of mine that had become a Christian at one of the I run a thing called the Encounter Camp. So he was an ex-drug addict, become a Christian at the camp, actually got saved, and he was a rapper. Because I'm street and down with the kids, fist pumping and all of that. So I got him to come, and he did some rap at the event. And then, because he's a bit maverick and not long a Christian, he didn't know that you don't do this. So he said, anyone else want to sing at the event? And then everyone said, Donna, you sing. I texted Donna this morning if I tell this story, and she said yes. He grabbed the microphone to Donna, and then she sang an Elvis Presley song. And I'm a closet Elvis Presley fan, all right? Sang an Elvis Presley song, Daddy Please Don't Cry. And she sang it beautifully, and it was so emotional. Do you know what I mean? And if ever I saw someone that's harassed and helpless, like a sheep without a shepherd, I could see it as she was singing this song. I stalked her. So the event came and went, and I found her on Facebook. You've got to love a bit of Facebook. GDRP, I don't know. But she put herself out there on Facebook. So hi, you sang at the event. Thanks for singing. It's really good. Fancy doing an open mic night sometime. She texts back saying, you're welcome, you know, a bit embarrassed, all of that. And then said, not about an open mic night, but I've always wanted to do a charity event, but never known where to start. Come and see me on Sunday. So Donna walks up. Donna's formidable, isn't she? She's got tattoos everywhere, and she's a formidable lady. So she walked up with I would describe them as her entourage. That were women off the estate, and she bounded up and said, Where's Jim? And she got this event planned in her head, and it was just a little bit scary. So we're giving out these leaflets, Hope Church, written on them. insurance, sort of that sort of stuff. I tend not to tell our trustees too much. So we got away with it. We did this event. And actually, do you know what? It was scary and all of that. But we ended up doing an event raising money for Macmillan, which is a fantastic cause, which was her idea. And we raised £1,600 for Macmillan. And somehow or other, it sort of cemented us together a bit as a community. By this time, we've got an opportunity. So the Worcester Community Trust are saying, we've got a cafe adjacent to the building, and it's not really open very much. Would you consider doing something in the cafe? Oh, doing my hair that day. But so we've opened that now every Friday afternoon, running a little cafe, and we were in the cafe, banter happening. The people in the community are in the cafe. It's a donation-based cafe. It's messy. But we're in the cafe, and then Donna comes up to me and says, Jim, my kids haven't been on holiday this summer. This was last summer. It was last summer, wasn't it? My kids haven't been on holiday. Any chance of a trip? And I grew up and I didn't get a holiday. So I remember going back to school in September, making up a holiday. I used to plan. So I used to think of stories so that when I went back to school, I had a holiday to talk about when all the other kids were talking about the holiday. So she knew, she didn't know, but somehow my heartstrings were tugged upon. So anyway, I said, yeah, come on, let's get a minibus, let's go. So we went off to Porthcawl and properly chavved up for the day. It was full on kiss me quick hat kind of beach. And we went to the beach and we came back and we had a great time and a minibus and several cars, and then a couple of weeks later Donna comes back into the cafe. We want to go again, Jim. What about Barry Island? I think they've been watching Gavin and Stacey and they wanted to go to Barry Island. Can you take us to Barry? And they started calling me Barry. Come on, Barry, let's go to Barry. All of this, and I sort of, you know, it's a bit of a joke. I said, I'll tell you what, I want to see you in church every Sunday for the whole of August and I'll take you to Barry. Bribery. And do you know what? That Sunday, a whole gang of them turned up and they sort of walked through the doors to our nice little church community. We're going to Barry! We're going to Barry! And anyway, so I changed the talk, preached the gospel, and I spoke to them afterwards and said, look, you know, you really don't have to come to church for me to take you to Barry. I'll take you to Barry Island. It'll be my pleasure. But I've loved it, you being here, thanks for coming, and you're really welcome. And that was summer, and they've all been every week since. And some are now finding their way to Jesus. So we a couple of weeks ago, there's a guy, young guy. So there's a couple in the church that were sort of spending some time with that person. I'd preached in the evening, and he went back and said, no, I think I want this, and responded, and they baptized him in their bath upstairs that night. Another lady came to see the same couple and said, look, I need some help. I've got a drink problem. I need some help. And another lady, bang, baptized in the bath. I don't know what you think about that. I presume this is a baptistry, not just somewhere to just sink me at 12. And so we're starting to see some inroads. But I need to tell you, you know, we had a little community, and people were coming from the Hope Central. We've got several congregations. People were coming to it because they liked the little community. And I've got to tell you, Donna's ruined it. She really has. So Donna was sitting on the back row, flicking the middle finger at me to try and put me off my sermon. People are sitting, having, you know, phone rings. They're just on their phone in church talking. They don't know that you sit politely for half an hour or whatever. They just don't know. Do you know what I mean? And so they don't. Their kids, the foundational years of their kids haven't been great, and so their kids are I don't know how to say it respectfully. They're just wild. Do you know what I mean? And we're trying to help them, and the parents are sometimes embarrassed about it. But I just want to trace that back. Do you know what I mean? So we're seeing right now, I would say, some fruit into the community, and people are finding their way to Jesus in the community. We're 3 years into that. It's been a long journey. But part of that, I look back and I think nobody else gave Donna a chance. She's an ex-addict. She's quite a strong lady, quite intimidating, you know. And most churches wouldn't know how to handle her. Do you know what I mean? I think you would. You're pretty good. You're doing okay with me. Do you know what I mean? You know, and there's this whole thing of seeing, opening our eyes and seeing the potential in someone and building with that person. And this open-hearted, I'm just going to serve with. So it was the charity event that we did that really opened a lot of doors for a lot of people to find church community, you know, was Donna's event. Do you know what I mean? It was her event. We bigged her up. She was the front person. It was her event, you know. And nobody had believed in her in that way. Do you know what I mean? So what have I learnt? Try and bring it to a close. What have I learnt? Sometimes we need to stop doing what everybody expects that we should do in church life to give ourselves space for what God wants to do. It's a biggie's right there. Do you know what I mean? There's a load of stuff that we do to maintain a church, to keep a church going. A brave church asks themselves if Jesus still wants us to do that. Quiet. make yourself available as an organisation, as a group, but also as individuals. My homework for you is to sit on a bench and wait until Jesus says something. Have you got enough space and enough kind of compassion in your heart to carve some time out of your schedule and sit on a bench in town until Jesus tells you to speak to someone? Give you something to say. And there's a moment that, you know, I'm telling stories and you might think, oh, you know, Jim's an evangelist or Jim's or whatever. I don't think I'm any of those things. Do you know what I mean? I have made some space. I just want to, you know, encourage you. And there comes a moment when that, you know, I remember I was in a cafe once some years ago and God had spoken to me about, it's one of the first kind of stepping out, speaking to people like this. You know, God spoke to me, gave me a word for a group of people in a cafe. It's in St. Peter's Garden Centre. And basically, the word I had for them was that that they'd just stopped doing something they're doing and God was going to tell them what to do next. Don't worry about it. It's going to be all right. And these were strangers. It wasn't a church cafe or anything like that. But I had to make myself available. I could have been busy. No, Jesus, sorry, I'm preparing a sermon, which is what I was doing. Or I could stand up and say, hi, I'm Jim. And there's a moment where I have to say, 1, 2, 3, jump. When I remember when we were teaching Naya, I had to jump into a swimming pool. Never that keen on it, as I recall. And we would say, come on, 1, 2, 3, jump. And that was usually 1, 2, 3. You know, but for me, I find I have to do that. I have to sit in my head, say 1, 2, 3, jump. Hi, I'm Jim. And once you've done that, you're sort of in. You're committed. You say your name, not mine. You know, be weird otherwise, wouldn't it? You know, 1, 2, 3, jump. You know, and I went to the couple in the two couples, and I said, "This is a random thing. I don't know whether you believe in Jesus. I don't know, but I think Jesus gave me a word for you, and it was that you've been doing something, and you've been faithfully doing that thing, and he's saying, don't worry about the future. I've got it in hand. All right, see you." and they went white, and they said, "Could you please sit down?" And they were missionaries. They'd just finished working in Hawaii. Tough gig. And that morning, and the picture I actually had, I didn't mention this, the picture I actually had was of them sat around a table with a map, and they were praying over the map. And actually that morning they'd been sat around a kitchen table with a map on it saying, God, what do you want us to do next? And God reached and spoke to them and said, you know, I've got something for you. And, you know, I'm condensing my best stories. Okay, I've never preached here before, so I can hit you all my old stories. These guys have heard these stories till they can tell them better than I can tell you them, because they're my favourite stories. So I've done a lot of years where there haven't been big stories. Do you know what I mean? But if you make yourself available, there will be some moments. Do you know what I mean? So what am I saying? Sometimes we have to stop and say, does Jesus still want us to do this stuff in church life? We need to make ourselves available. And I encourage you as a church, God, are we available to the crowd? Are we available to see those who are harassed and helpless and like sheep without shepherd? Are we available to it? Am I as an individual available to that? Do you know what I mean? And I would say, whether you feel gifted or not, sit on a bench and see what Jesus does. That's my encouragement to you. I've said this, I've made this challenge to a few people over the years, and people have come back to me and say, I did, and he did. I think, you know, how can this community, so God's opened the door with us with Worcester Community Trust, what's he going to open for you guys? Do you know what I mean? What Jesus talked about, go to a person of peace. I feel like we've found an organization of peace. Do you know what I mean? So I want to encourage you, who can you partner with that isn't necessarily a Christian group, where you can be Lifehouse Church and stop being church? Always a waste of time. Do you know what I mean? But how can you get alongside and serve? What can you do to serve? I mean, the Rock Conversation's coming up. Beautiful, brilliant platform for discovering some stuff that there's a need in the community. And so, okay, Lifehouse will do it. What about that? There's this need. Lifehouse will do it. Do you know what I mean? And it could change everything. And you get people coming through the doors that will trash your church. Do you know what I mean? I had people from the congregation when Donna and that lot started coming to church, say, Jim, I don't like it anymore. It's not for us anymore. Nope, it isn't. Not easy. They're with me now. It's fine. And I would say this in closing. Jesus is still looking with compassion. Yes. Jesus is still seeing with compassion. He's still moved with compassion. So two things on that. You know, if you are feeling right now harassed and helpless, and if you're feeling lost, broken, and you might, to be honest with you, you don't have to have not, you don't have to not be a Christian to feel like that. Do you know what I mean? If you're feeling like that, I want to encourage you that Jesus is seeing and he's moved with compassion. Do you know what I mean? He's seeing it. I'll encourage you with that. And you know, we'd love to pray for you. As you know, we'll make some space at the end if you feel like, yeah, I'm broken, I'm struggling here, I'm drowning. If you're feeling like that, come and speak to somebody. Speak to Matt, Joe, or you know, me if you want to. And we'd be delighted to pray with you, because Jesus is still moved with compassion, and he's with you. He leans towards that kind of brokenness and that hunger. And then I would say, you know, how can you as an individual, how can you as a church open your eyes to see the crowd? How can you open your eyes to see those who are harassed and helpless and broken?